Hello again, and welcome to a Planet Beyond podcast, brought to you by Fugro, the leading partner in delivering geodata from the greatest subsea depths right to outer space, and hosted by me, John Baston Pitt. In a few days, the Planet Beyond team will be in Barcelona for the 2024 Ocean Decade Conference, where we'll be recording episodes in front of a live audience. We'll be talking to delegates and conference speakers for a mini-series that will air during and after the conference. In our last episode with Jane Glavin and David Miller, we looked at the important role that oceans have to play in limiting the impact of climate change. We saw how Jane's work seeding mangroves with drones is helping to reduce flooding risks and at the same time is capturing and storing carbon. We heard from David about a new focus on the ocean from the international community and its importance as part of a nature-based approach to climate mitigation. In this episode, we want to dive deeper. We've seen what the ocean means to the planet. Now, we want to look at what the ocean means to us as individuals and as communities. We're joined by two guests, Andy Donaldson and Robbie Seeger, who've built their lives around the ocean. Andy is a world record-breaking swimmer. Last year, he swam the Cook Strait between New Zealand's North and South Islands in 4 hours and 33 minutes. That's the fastest anyone has swam this 22-kilometre channel. That was one of seven channel swims in 355 days that he has completed as part of the Ocean 7 Challenge. This summer, Andy will be taking part in Epic Swim Maui, organised by Robbie Seeger, who has spent 30 years windsurfing around the world. This new challenge will see 10 of the world's best open water swimmers swimming together and meeting with scientists, indigenous leaders, and environmental champions. The swim will take place over 2 weeks. Swimmers will be guided by local experts, camping between swims and learning about Hawaii's culture and indigenous knowledge on the way. At the same time, they'll be using cutting-edge sensors to record conditions in the water. We caught up with Andy and Robbie in Maui. They had just met in person for the first time that day, and with the time difference, they were speaking to us a little bit past midnight. Andy, Robbie, welcome to Planet Beyond.
Thank you for having us here.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Now, you've both engaged with the ocean in quite remarkable ways. Let's look first at what the ocean means to each of you. Let's start with you, Andy, if I may. You grew up in West Kilbride, Scotland, and I'm sure that will be obvious to many from your accent. There's a beautiful coast there, but it's not the first place that comes to mind when we're thinking of open water swimming. Could you tell us a little bit more about learning to swim and your aims as a young swimmer?
I Absolutely, John. So, as you mentioned, I grew up in the west coast of Scotland, a little village called West Kilbride, and we were very blessed to grow up on such a beautiful coastline. The west coast of Scotland is very rugged. The water is stunning. It's a tad fresh. You know, anyone that knows Scotland well, it's cold enough in the air, never mind the water. But, you know, I grew up in a family of very outdoor orientated people, us Donaldsons. You know, sport was heavily intertwined with our day-to-day lives, and swimming was one of those sports. My older cousin and my sister were both heavily involved in, and I essentially followed their footsteps. It was very much pool club swimming. You were considered a bit mad to go in the sea there.
So when did you start swimming competitively?
I think it was around six, but competitive swimming started at the age of seven, joining my local club, North Ayrshire Amateur Swimming Club. It's more from a place of passion. I don't think you join a sport to try and make the Olympic Games, but, you know, over time, you know, as I improved, that became the goal and to work towards that path. And I think it's important that we have goals to work toward. Certainly helps on those cold mornings when you're waking up trying your craft, and there's a lot of cold mornings in the west coast of Scotland, I can tell you that.
But that did fairly quickly lead to you aiming for the Olympics. That was as ambitious a goal as any sports person can have.
Yeah, it was. It's certainly one where there's a lot of dedication and commitment involved. You know, to race at the Olympic Games, very few people get that opportunity. It's you're really talking about the 0.01% of the world that get that opportunity.
You moved to Perth in 2013 to train for the Olympics. But at this point, you weren't going to be one of the tiny fraction of athletes who make it.
That's right, John. So I unfortunately fell short of that dream. There was a couple of things that happened. I badly injured my shoulder in the lead up to the trials in 2014 for the Commonwealth Games. And there was a part of me that lacked the belief that I could make it.
So your focus was the end goal and not so much about enjoying the journey.
But for me, as a 24-year-old or a 23-year-old, I didn't quite grasp that. And I ended up leaving the sport quite unfulfilled, a bit burnt out from it, because that had been everything for me, and lacking a bit of identity. Mm. You know, it was very much wrapped up around the sport. And I ended up, you know, I left swimming. I had this void in my life, and I ended up replacing it with work. And really throwing myself into a career which was accounting.
That's a long way from your earlier goals. How did you feel about going into a career that is office-based and, well, so far from where you had been aiming?
In the beginning, I was really enjoying it. I was good at my job, and things were going well, I was progressing well. But I think, you know, there was always that level of unfulfillment there that had never really been addressed, sitting below the surface. And I never quite dealt with it properly. And I wasn't really living in a way that was sustainable. You know, my family would come over from Scotland, and, you know, aside from some dinners and coffees, I wasn't really spending much quality time with them. I wasn't exercising all that much. And over time, things weren't in balance and weren't sustainable.
And that's when in 2019, you quit accountancy and took another giant leap. Isn't that right?
I certainly did, John. I went soul searching and quit my job and went backpacking around the world. So put my bed up on Gumtree, sold all my possessions, packed my life into one bag and went off to see the world. And, you know, it was the first time in my life, I think, where I was really living with some freedom and outside of a structured manner.
So what brought you back to Australia?
It was something in 2020 called the COVID pandemic. So, you know, I think sometimes the universe works in funny ways. And obviously the pandemic was in a really terrible thing. But a lot of good things happened out of it. And at the time I was working in a country called Nicaragua in Central America. I was working as a volcano tour guide. You know, living half a world away, running away from life, and it was really COVID that brought me back to Perth.
And that brought you back to the ocean too?
By chance, you know, on my first day out of quarantine, I decided to go for a swim down at the beach. And pulled into a car, but at the end of it was a gentleman that I knew, a guy called Martin Smoovey, and he was an old friend and mentor of mine. And he clocked me and he's like, "Andy Donaldson, where on earth have you been? I've not seen you around the water in years." And he's like, "Andy, right, tomorrow let's go for a swim. Come down and we'll go swim together." It was a real raw reminder of just how important the ocean is to, well, particularly to my own life and being immersed in it and having that time to be alone with your own thoughts. It's one of the few sports where you can really do that and you're not plugged in. You're not looking at your phone, reading emails, looking at your social media feed. You're in there, you're in the elements, gliding through this body of water. And, you know, you get all the endorphins from it. It's really good for your health, your physical health, your mental health. And I think equally important is just the opportunity to be immersed in community.
You found a way to build that community with a group you and Martin founded called Swim Clan.
We started coaching swimmers and people to get into open water swimming with the purposes of life enrichment and pursuing goals that may have been swept under the rug or put off. And perhaps, I think there was this big mindset shift during COVID where people were starting to realize this, that there are more things to life than work.
At the same time that you were helping others rediscover their love for the ocean, you were returning to the water. You completed the Rottnest Channel Swim, one of Australia's most iconic swimming challenges. Then, in less than a year, you completed the Ocean 7 Challenge, swimming 7 of the world's toughest channels. You did that in a shorter total time and shortest time in the water of any swimmer. What did you learn from that?
You can go a lot further when you have the right people around. And they're all messages around endurance and sustainability. And you know, they're very translatable, I think, from sport into life. And then if you were to look at something like Epic Swim Maui, again, it's translatable into how can we look after our oceans and the land that we live on. We can't do it on our own. We have to tackle these challenges together. And I think I was in Los Angeles at the time preparing for a swim there when Robbie reached out to me about Epic Swim Maui. And I think he understood and saw that our values aligned.
Well, Robbie, let us hear from you now. Robbie, you founded Epic Swim Maui. You've You've spent much of your life in Hawaii, but you didn't grow up there, did you? Could you tell us, by way of an introduction, how you learned to swim and about your sporting career?
So for me, I grew up in Germany, and I was always very avid about sport. That was my release to just talk about mental health. We didn't know much about mental health back then, but sport just always felt good. It was soccer, it was swimming, it was high diving, it was horseback riding, and my parents were always in great support of us being active.
What sport grabbed your full focus in the end?
But I fell in love with windsurfing at the age of 12. I became one of the youngest competitors on the World Tour with 16. And then I spent almost a quarter century on the World Tour in windsurfing. I managed to make it to the top of my sport. I was never really geared to winning. I was happy when my sponsors were happy. I wanted freedom. That was my thing. And the ocean gave me a feeling of, I guess, safety, where maybe a lot of people wouldn't say it. For me, it was always, it was more my place. And I think it's a life, for me, life on land was always harder. And the ocean was my safe place. And it was also my place to recharge. And my sport was a way to have the freedom to get out of Germany. Yeah. Northern Germany is not a bad thing, but Hawaii sounded a lot better.
You built a new life in Hawaii. And as you winded down your own sporting career, you saw an opportunity to build something new. You created Epic Swim Maui, in which 10 swimmers from 6 countries will swim together around the island. How did the island inspire you?
How many times can you do something for the first time on the planet? Most things have already been done, right? People are trying to go to Mars, but nobody has swam around Maui. So Maui is big enough where it's daunting, and it's small enough where it's possible. So we're truly kind of stepping into the journey, a journey into the unknown together.
There's something deeply inspiring about the swim itself. You're building a new community of swimmers, and you're helping bring attention to a part of Hawaii that has, well, of course, suffered deeply in recent months.
We've had the really terrible wildfires of Lahaina. A lot of destruction, a lot of death. And I see this as, in a very sensitive time, also as a support from the world to celebrate, to bring something positive, right? To show up, to carry the stories of from Maui into the whole world.
But your message extends much further.
We're bringing indigenous knowledge together with high-end science, and the swimmers are the red line that bring us through the stories of Maui. But Maui is not just about Maui. Maui is also about the world, right? The islands are very affected to global warming. I mean, so really learning, what does sustainable development really mean? What are the United Nations really talking about? You know, it's not just building a stable infrastructure. It's also understanding the management of natural resources.
It's valuable to look at that vast legacy of knowledge that indigenous people bring. But you're also helping to generate new understanding. Tell us about that.
There's a big aspect of citizen science. A lot of the scientists that we're talking to, they're going like, well, it's great. You know, you meet the scientists from Egypt or somebody from America or from Germany, and we all talk amongst each other. But what if a large number of people integrate into a high quality data collection and free source this to international science? So I think citizen science we have here, we have school classes, collecting water samples for Scripps Institute in San Diego and Dayham Lab for nanoplastic and microplastic shedding of the textile industry. Our science partnerships are expanding as we're moving towards our swim date. So there's more and more universities that are signing up or scientists working on certain studies. The big ones that we have going on right now is the Heron Institute in Germany, Helmholtz.
And that is a project on PFAS chemicals, commonly known as forever chemicals, as they don't break down in the environment, right? Tell us more.
Here in Hawaii, the military is tested for PFAS, but they're not very advanced with this. So Heron is the world leader. They've worked in that field for 20 years. So it's since 1946, what I've learned is all household goods have non-water soluble and non-oil soluble chemical compounds that are like everything Teflon, Gore-Tex, and it goes to firefighting foams, so it's everywhere. And these PFAS chemicals are very, very hard to detect. There's a lot of novel chemicals out there, and they're literally around forever because they're non-water and non-oil soluble. And they find them 1,000 feet under Arctic ice. They find them on the highest mountains.
This is a major study that you are collaborating on.
We represent the first global study on PFAS by Heron. We represent with Epic Swim Maui, the Central Pacific Basin. So that's a very big one.
What other important collaborations do you have going?
And then we're working with University of Hawaii continued on water testing around the island of Maui. This is there's a lot of sites that need more data regarding injection wells, you know, other practices from agriculture, runoff, a lot of different things where just more data is needed in order to figure out how to best address long-term damage that has already been done or how it can be remediated. We are working with CNSUN Technology in Germany on finger-sized probes with sensors that are literally the size of your thumb.
The size of a thumb? How are you planning to use these?
Wow.
We would like to see them embedded in swim shorts so that, that Andy can be swimming. He can have a smartwatch.
And data can be collected in real time and continuously.
It'll go straight up to a satellite and basically become available on wherever he was swimming, on either conductivity, temperature, salinity, or whatnot. We're trying to figure out right now with international science what are the important measurements that could be the most useful.
Great idea. The swimmers will be collecting valuable data and helping develop new tools for research as well. But let's turn back to other forms of knowledge. For those of us who've learned about history from a European perspective, the great age of exploration took place in a few hundred years from the 15th century onwards. But another great age of exploration came earlier. When the Polynesians explored the Pacific, they settled a wide triangle of the planet stretching from New Zealand to Easter Island and up to Hawaii. Tell us a little bit about that history, Robbie.
Yeah, I'm going to get beaten up here if I educate the world about Hawaiian culture. You know, very important for you guys to know and for me to also speak this to anybody that's listening. We're not another white man telling a Hawaiian story. So what we are is we're building connections through the United Nations Ocean Decade, through all of our science partners, our brand partners, our governmental alliances that we have here. We are just creating the platform where the stories can be heard. and especially local stories with global significance. I mean, for me, I'm in awe of the Hawaiian culture. There is an incredible amount of heritage and knowledge that gets passed down. When I imagine, we live on Maui, and we have 169,000 people currently that are residents here, and 2.5 million tourists. But in the ancient days, there were 4 million Hawaiians that thrived completely separated and isolated from the world here in the Pacific. And they had an understanding of Mauka to Makai. That means from the top of the mountain, past the reef into the deep ocean.
Many of us live our lives far from the ocean. You're helping share that Hawaiian perspective on the ocean. But how can listeners who live in a city apartment develop their own link to the ocean?
It's important that we're all part of the conversation, right? And let's really simplify it. If you live in a high rise in the city and you breathe oxygen, you're connected to the ocean, because the oceans are the lungs of our planet, especially the Pacific. And you know, if you have to boil it down for people to understand, ocean health is human health. No blue, no green. At the end of the day, we've managed to get pretty disconnected in a few generations.
Yes.
Through the Industrial Revolution, through instant gratifications, terrible food, all these different things.
We are linked to the ocean with every breath we take. Through sport and other leisure activities, we can feel an immediate connection. And that can restore some of the sense of place we lose in modern society. Now, one Hawaiian, Duke Kahanamoku, has done much more than almost anyone else to help share that sense of connectiveness. Epic Swim Maui will be celebrating his life. Tell us about Duke, Robbie.
Duke is called the father of surfing, and he's known worldwide, and in the surfing industry, he's often honored and talked about. But what very few people know, that Duke was an Olympic gold medal swimmer. He has 5 medals. He was literally one of the best swimmers of his time in the 1920s, 1930s. And the Duke is at this point, is almost a deity in Hawaii. So he's larger than life, and they call him also the ambassador of aloha. Because I do believe that how can I put this as a white German? The world could really use a healthy dose of aloha, right? And this is a language of the heart. This is a connection of the heart. This is sharing what you love. This is helping others. This is taking care, understanding. There's Hawaiian words like malama means to take care of things. Kuleana is your responsibility, right? And that gives me chills, because it is very, very simple. If you wake up every morning, you have your coffee, and you look at your family, or you go into your job and you ask yourself, what kind of an ancestor do I actually want to be? Right? We all have a responsibility.
We do. And people in Hawaii and around the world were reminded of the importance of responsibility to others by the terrible wildfires that hit Lahaina last August.
Lahaina is 30 minutes drive away from me. When 5 square miles burned down, we didn't even know it happened, right? And it is such, Andy is going to see it tomorrow, as I was very involved in the aftermath of the fire. And I tell you, 5 square miles seem, it's nothing space-wise, right? 5 square miles. But the amount of trauma and despair and displacement and loss of life that happened on that 5 square miles is monumental. So again, this disaster can strike anybody at any time, but I think the way, as a collective, the way we respond to it, and I must also say, like, our community after the fire, I've never seen anything like it. Everybody came together. They got their jet skis in the water, their boats. They brought supplies over. They did whatever they could. Amazing. So if the world would come to an end, I would love to be on Maui, because I know that my community here absolutely gears in and shows up for one another. But I think that can also happen on a bigger level, right? On a national level, on a global level, is because at the end of the day is we come into this life, it's full of wisdom. We come into this life with nothing. And we're going to leave with experiences and how, and the memories on how we treated people, right? And so I think we can really make a conscious effort every day to try to put our best foot forward.
That's something that each of the swimmers taking part in Epic Swim Maui are doing. Tell us about some of the other work they will be supporting.
You know, when I look at one of our swimmers from Ghana, Yvette Tete, she's a big advocate for pollution, but also, how can I say it, like conduct of the textile industry globally. And you know how Andy swims for mental health, and he speaks for it. Every swimmer has their own endeavor, their own thing that they stand for, and so it's our job as filmmakers and storytellers to weave the stories together, where as we're moving through the mokus and learning about the indigenous knowledge, collecting the samples, working with scientists. So I think the mainstream is going to pay attention to open water ultra marathon swimmers like Andy, and I also hope that what we could accomplish and can accomplish is that these guys are actually getting the support to be able to have a professional career with their sport. Because a lot of the swimmers, they're paying for their own swims.
One thing I love about hosting this podcast is that it shows the power of storytelling. You're using that power to support Hawaiians and the inhabitants of Lahaina in particular. You're sharing indigenous stories and helping scientists find new ways to tell the story of our planet and our oceans. But Andy, let's finish off by returning to your story. What does a challenge like this mean to you?
You know, for me, being a swimmer, I'm immersing myself in the ocean, and it's something that I tangibly see having a tangible impact on my life. I'm encouraging other people to get into swimming, and I think it's a natural step towards having more of a ownership of something that directly benefits you, and that would be maybe something that we could do. You know, we can encourage people to get into the water, to take care of it. I think having those conversations and really encouraging people to take care of our oceans is a good starting point. Getting people into the water, that's what we can do.
Thank you, Andy, and thank you, Robbie. Robbie and Andy have built a deep connection with the ocean. In the stories they've told us today, we've seen how we can each share that connection. The ocean can inspire amazing feats of endurance and commitment. It has given Andy and Robbie a focus for their lives and a sense of purpose. It has been core to the identity and shared knowledge of Hawaiians and of other Polynesian people. And as Robbie says, no blue, no green. Every living thing on this planet is connected to the ocean. I hope today we've helped listeners feel that connection and inspired a sense of responsibility. We have a connection and responsibility to the ocean, to each other, and Epic Swim Maui will reinforce that using science, data, and citizen science at the heart of what they do. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, leave a rating in the podcast app you're listening on and help us reach a wider audience by sharing this episode with your network, your family, and friends. As I always say, until next time, be safe, be remarkable, be the difference.